Hey, Nick.
Hey, John.
It's Pride Month.
It is.
And we're going to have another, like, not stupid, silly one.
Like we usually do.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are going to talk bluntly about, I don't know, human body parts and psychology and stuff. So if you're a parent and you're worried about your child hearing about body parts, don't let them listen to this one.
They're going to know eventually, though.
But, I mean,
maybe just, like, put the headphones on and leave the room. This is a good way to introduce that, right?
Yeah. It subs in for that conversation that you have with your children. So.
Perfect. We did a great job.
All right.
This is Stranger Still.
One other quick disclaimer at the top. There was a little bit of feedback from Skype. So you might hear our voices reflected a couple times, but it's a beautiful episode, so bear with it, and you'll learn a lot of amazing things. Thank you.
Hi, Nicholas.
This is Stranger Still.
It's a podcast where we answer the questions you never thought to ask.
And this week, like we said in the intro, it is our last episode of Pride Month, so we thought that we would bring in our guest.
You could say your
name. Oh, I did this last week, didn't I?
Yeah, we did. We kind of just left them hanging. Roman!
Roman!
Oh, Roman, yes. I didn't know if that was my cue or yours.
No, we like to come to this thing inadequately prepared, so I just don't tell any people what I'm doing. So, Roman has joined us. Roman, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Roman Fitzgerald, and I am a trans man, transgender, part of the transgender community. And I've been asked by these great guys to be part of this podcast.
That's very kind. So this week we are going to talk about the whole gender reassignment process and everything that goes into that. And I just want to say up top real fast, two things actually. First of all, if you haven't listened to our episode on cognitive dissonance 2 weeks ago, go listen to that. Because if you have any barriers about any of the LGBTQ issues, hopefully that episode will help you break down those walls. And second of all, I know that there's a lot of tension that comes with the word male and female. So anytime I say male or female, I'm strictly speaking anatomy-wise.
Yep.
So if I stopped and said that every time, it would add like 15 minutes onto this episode.
Yeah, so like we said, sexuality is a spectrum, so is gender. And
so
that's
anatomy-wise, yep. Male and female. Yes. So let's just hop right into it. I don't think there's a lot of other fluff that I need to say to you.
No, I think that's pretty damn good.
Cool. So I'm going to start off with a blunt question. Why do people undergo gender reassignment? And to me... Oh, sorry, I cut you off there.
Go ahead.
What's your answer, Roman?
I guess when I speak, I can only speak for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know a lot of people feel the same way I do, but, specifically people suffer from body dysmorphic disorder. And, it's really, if you look at it, it's not just in the trans community. Mm-hmm. It's, you see, you know, men that get pectoral implants or women that actually get breast implants. It's the same thing for transgender person. It's actually now considered a mental disorder. It wasn't mm-hmm. before, and it's mainly categorized like by an obsessive this obsessive preoccupation, some aspect of your appearance. It's like just so deeply flawed that you'd go to like great measures to hide it or fix it, and that's what doctors have looked into, and that's how they've categorized it. Like,
that's
body dysmorphic.
That's perfect. Yeah, the word that I came across was dysphoria, which is the psychological condition where you just aren't comfortable in the gendered body that you are in.
Yeah, that you were being assigned.
They actually call it BDD for short. So it's body dysmorphia dysmorphic syndromes.
Oh, perfect. So. Yeah. And I think the kind of the disorder comes in where it just puts all this unneeded stress into your life where you can't feel right, so
absolutely,
to speak.
Absolutely, yes. It does cause a lot of unneeded stress and depression and sadly enough, and some people even suicide because they feel there's no way out of it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty serious mental disorder. The dysphoric part of it
Now, like you said, though, it does go far beyond the trans community. I came across a figure that said up to 700,000 Americans can feel dysphoria. So out of 325 million-ish Americans, that's one in 500 people.
Yeah,
so
wow.
if you suffer from dysphoria, you're in good company. There's a large percentage of the population that feels this way. And when it comes to mental disorders or mental conditions, it deals with the brain, which we all know means that we don't know a lot of why it happens because we don't really understand the brain. We don't know what causes it. But the outward understanding of it is pretty clear, as Roman outlined. So when people suffer from this, what do they do?
Well, I guess it's different for everyone. Some people are lucky enough to have the means to go ahead and change whatever it is that is really causing them to feel dysphoric about their bodies. And others don't. Others hide it with clothes, or a lot of trans men, we do this thing called binding. If you guys don't know what that is, it's usually a really tight bind around the chest so that it flattens the chest completely out. And
that sounds very uncomfortable.
It is. It's very uncomfortable. It causes pain in the ribs, and it kind of restricts your breathing, and it's even worse in the summer when it's like 90 degrees.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah.
It's killer, but that's you know, you go through those kind of measures to hide certain aspects of your body that you're just so unhappy with. You're willing to go through the discomfort of that just to appear the way you feel. You really feel that you should appear the who you really are, you know. And then, like I said, others that are fortunate, they go ahead and they go as far as surgery.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, either a cis person or a trans person just going under the knife to change what they're unhappy about.
Yeah, gender reassignment is kind of the umbrella term for all of that. What I kind of really wanted to dive into was the whole process of, like you said, if people have the means to take it a step further, what that all entails. Because like we talked about last week, a lot of the societal, I guess, bigotry or hatred toward the community, I feel it comes from fear. So
yeah,
if we can explain it, maybe it'll get rid of that fear.
Well, I was just exploring this the other day on Twitter, which is just a swamp of hatred. But I've found in general that a lot of people that are more conservative have conservative values because it's fearful. It's tribalism, which is what we've had since we were little baby humans and cave people. And you want to trust and like believe and be passionate and nice to the people that you know. And then if it's the others, that's scary. And that aspect of psychology is kind of stuck with some of our society. And it'd be nice to get rid of it, because to be progressive and to accept people and understand things is to lose that fear.
Yeah, and knowledge is our biggest tool in understanding. So taking it a step further, the first step that I came across for most people, and it didn't seem like this was required by any means, but the first step was a psychiatric evaluation. Did you go through that, Roman?
Absolutely, and actually, it is a requirement. In the state of Florida, which is that's where I am. Before I can get to the next step of getting on hormone therapy and getting my prescription for testosterone, I had to have a psychological evaluation.
Yes.
From a doctor, basically saying, "Hey, look, this person is not psycho. This is a real thing."
Yeah.
And then there, because you can go to an endo, and they're not going to – an endo is a doctor that deals with hormones or whatnot. Mm-hmm. They will not prescribe you testosterone or if you're a male to female or estrogen without that initial psychological evaluation. So in the state of Florida, that was my first step. I had to see a doctor, and he had to okay that. And then from there, went to the endocrinologist, and then with that note given, I was able to start my hormone therapy a year ago now.
Awesome. I'll come back to that whole year from now thing, or year ago, in a second. But when you sit down with the doctor, it's kind of my understanding that they just talk about why you want to go under the treatments or the reassignment, ensure that you suffer from dysphoria, talk about what your support structure is like who's going to support you going through this, and then go over the risks and limitations of the reassignment. Does that sound right?
Yeah. It was actually, this is not typical that is done, but, I had my first, like I said, my first psychological evaluation a year ago, and that was to get initially on hormone therapy. Mm-hmm. And then, typically in the state of Florida, all you need is one psychological evaluation, and that's good enough. But I am actually due for my top surgery July 5th.
Yeah. And congratulations.
Thank you. And my insurance, and I know a lot of transgender people that go through this with insurance. They go through hoops of fire to try to get out of pain for any of it. So they actually had me do a second psychological evaluation because I guess, I guess the first one didn't convince them that I wasn't crazy. So
yeah. It's so weird that you'd have issues with our healthcare system at all. that's right? Weird.
But the second psychological evaluation was much more detailed than the first one. How you mentioned as far as asking, you know, what kind of backing I have as far as family and friends, and the first one was really very simple. Was just like, hey, this is the way I've always felt, and the note was written up, and I got my my prescription for testosterone. Now the second one was just like it was plain. It's like playing 200 questions with someone. They really they ask you anything they can, you know. And luckily, I saw a really great doctor who wrote a really amazing note, and then there was no way insurance could deny it. But
perfect.
Yeah, they really go into whatever they can find, you know. And they do ask you the most craziest questions, the most personal things that have absolutely nothing to do with you know, your hormone therapy or even going under the knife. But
do you have an example of like one of the more bizarre benign questions they asked you?
One of the really bizarre questions they asked me that I didn't understand was if my family had a history of high cholesterol. And
no, we all eat Cheerios. I don't know.
Right, I don't even know what this has to do with that. But then from that question, they jump from that to like, so have you always felt this way? And I was just like, how do you jump from it? Just
that's very jarring.
Yeah, and it was weird because then the next question was, have you tried our new Honey Nut Cheerios brand cereal?
I wouldn't have been surprised if that would have been the next.
Yeah, and you left out the coupon, and it was just
that was just so out there. It was kind of it threw me off because I couldn't tie it into anything.
Yeah. Well, I have a couple theories as to why they might make you do a second psych eval, but I'll save that for a little bit here. I like to circle back around to things you'll learn, Roman. Our listeners already know that I always say the word allude.
Yeah.
But after the psych evaluation comes hormone treatment. If you, like you said, you get that note from the doctor, you take it to, you said the endo doctor?
Yeah, it's an endocrinologist.
Perfect.
And it's a doctor that focuses on hormones and all that kind of stuff. Before you can see that doctor, you do have to get blood work. that doctor won't see you without a specific blood work that measures your estradiol levels, your estrogen level, and your testosterone level.
Oh, yeah,
you
got to bring
that into the doctor first before he or she will give you that prescription. Yeah. Granted, your levels are all fine, then they go ahead and they start you on that. And then you see that doctor about every 3 months, and you got to get blood work every time before getting another prescription.
I assume that's just so they know kind of what to prescribe you based on where your body's at?
Right, right. They want to know how your body's taking in this, you know, this just new hormone. Not a new hormone, but so much of it at once. And, you know, they want to make sure that your kidneys are processing it
fine. Oh, yeah, I'm thinking of that.
Yeah, yeah, because if it does give you kidney problems, they'll do this thing where they put you on a, what they call a tea break. So they'll have you off of it like for 2-3 months, do more blood work. If you're looking fine, they'll put you back on it. But so the blood work is really, really important. It's a really important aspect of it because you want to make sure you're doing this in a healthy and safe way, you know.
Cool, yeah. I didn't even read about that anywhere, so that's awesome. And from my understanding, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, individuals transitioning from female to male might take either like testosterone or synthetic creation of it or estrogen blockers?
Correct. Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's 3 ways to take testosterone. There's a pill form, and that's going to be the slowest way to transition, for lack of better words. And then there's a gel that you can actually put on your skin, and your skin absorbs
Whoa.
It.
That's and cool.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think you could put a, you know, a gel on your skin, and your skin, you put that on your skin every day, and it absorbs it, and that starts the transitioning process. And then there's the shots, which is what I'm on, and that's the fastest, fastest way, most effective way, most painful way, but shots are definitely not fun, but intramuscular shots are the fastest way to see results and transition.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I'm surprised there's not like more bros at the beach with testosterone sunscreen and stuff.
Give it a few years.
Just like...
Just came up with a $1 million idea.
Yeah.
Start selling that.
Trademark.
Yeah. I'll file it under my LLC. So from my understanding, these hormones going female to male will deepen the voice, increase facial and body hair growth. It can also give male pattern baldness, which I'm experiencing. This will also give more muscle, as is traditional in the male body, and also enlarge the clitoris.
Yes, yes, it can do all of that. It definitely changes your body a lot. I don't fit into any of my old clothes anymore, and it's I'm a small guy, but it's just it's crazy how the hormone will take your body and it will make you so much broader, without any sort of exercise or anything like that. And then the voice does drop. Was one of the first things to happen within like 3 to 4 months. I know some guys that have been on T for 2 years and still don't have facial hair. Mine didn't grow until about like 7 to 8 months in.
Interesting.
Into the process. I guess that's different for everyone. It depends on the person. But my hairline has receded, but luckily I do long line of really good hair. You know,
good.
My family has really good full hair, so I'm not too worried about
Yeah.
So your hairline does recede, and then things do go on downstairs. and that again is different for everyone. Some people have very, very little growth that is not noticeable, and then some people have they can grow up to an inch, you know. So once again, just like the facial hair, it's all about the way your body takes it in, you know.
Yeah, from person to person.
And that's the thing you touch on, that it's just kind of like, I always find that question just like the worst when there's cis people that go up and ask like, oh, what's it like down there? Like, how often do you go up to another straight person and ask them what their genitals look like? You know, like, kind of none of their business. Yeah.
A cis person and ask them about their genitals or what have going on in their pants. So yeah.
Kind of nobody's business.
Nobody's
business.
Yeah.
Absolutely, right? To each your own.
Right. Yeah. And I also want to take this moment just to address for any of the conservative minds or people that still just are like, no, this is unnatural, whatever. When you get right down to it, this, my understanding is this is what happens in the womb when a baby boy is formed. Because everyone is conceived a female as like the beginning stages of a fetus. And then at a point during the pregnancy, during like due to hormonal changes or something, the fetus is decided whether it's male or female. And the ovaries in a female fetus turn into testicles and the clitoris turns into a penis.
Yeah.
So just, again, to any conservatives out there, I mean, don't be hating. A similar process happened to you, so.
Yeah.
I hope that's okay to say.
But you guys are probably all really good progressives anyway, so we're fine.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if there's any conservatives listening, but we can try. We can try.
Yeah.
I wanted to circle back real fast to another thing you said. Some like people have not seen any facial hair growth in 2 years or so. I saw some figures that some of these physical results can show up in as little as a month. In some cases, it can take up to 5 years for anything to start showing up. I assume it requires a lot of patience.
It really does. I remember my first visit with my doctor. She told me after she gave me the prescription, she pulled me aside and she told me, like, basically what's going to happen is the next 2 years is going to be 2 years of male puberty. That's exactly what you're going to be going through. You know, you're going to get the acne, which I've never had acne in my life till I started testosterone. And she said, your voice is going to crack. Your libido is going to change. You're going to grow hair at places you never had hair.
Yep.
And it's all very true. And she said, it's really like, you know, to come full circle in it, it's a 2 year process of puberty all over again, just male puberty.
That sounds frightening. So to me. I don't want to do that again.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy.
It's probably also like equally rewarding though when you make a milestone and you like, hey, you know, like I would think that if I were wanting to go through this and I have facial hair for the first time, like.
Can I just say, like, personal experience when I was going through puberty and I could actually like shave my face, I was like, oh my god, it's finally real.
Yeah. So that was the best.
It was the same way for me. I was so frustrated because you know, I have friends who were on T for 4 or 5 months and they had facial hair and I wasn't growing any. So it almost feels like it was from one day to another, like I was just clean shaven and then 7-8 months in it was just like boom, like all this facial hair. So, and even if I didn't have any facial hair, I was still just shaving in the hopes that something would
happen. You're like 5 or 6 steps ahead of me anyway. Yeah. I got nothing up here.
Yeah. John still doesn't have facial hair.
No, you know, when my facial hair came in, a lot of my my good friends, my cis dude friends, are like, I'm so jealous you have more facial hair.
I'm not surprised.
They gotta get some of that suntan lotion.
Yeah,
John,
suntan lotion. Real fast, just to kind of cover when you transition from male to female, just so we get both sides of it. And I don't know how much of this you'd be able to speak to, but it's very similar. You could take estrogen, or I don't think there's testosterone blockers, but there's definitely synthetic versions. This is going to increase the amount of breast tissue. It's going to move your fat reserves around your body. So kind of like you said before, it's like your whole body's going to have a new shape. Like I've heard before, like in health class, you can think of men and women as triangles. Their body shape is a triangle where like the two points on a triangle are at the top for men and at the bottom for women, where our shoulders are broader and women's hips are broader. So it kind of creates those weird body shapes. it'll stop facial hair growth, and even some hair will just stop growing. Mm-hmm. And I think I read that some breast sizes can get up to like a cup size or even bigger, but yeah, usually like, it's around an A cup.
Yeah, those are definitely things that could happen with male to female. And I don't know if this can be done after, you know, male puberty, but I know before a natural male puberty, there's actually an implant they can put into your body that is a testosterone blocker.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, maybe so before you even hit puberty, is blocking that testosterone from just increasing in your body, and the estrogen that you're on will take over.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So that, I'm not sure if you can do that after puberty, but I know before puberty you can, as you know, male to female.
Cool. It's basically just like going through middle school. But
yeah.
A lot more than that, I guess. I shouldn't just generalize it down to that. But so I kind of get the feeling that maybe the reason that they had a second psych evaluation done is because apparently 75% of people that undergo the hormone treatment never go on to get surgery. And that's because a lot of these people feel like that the hormone treatment has been enough to lift this weight that they've been feeling, to dissolve the dysphoria, and make them feel like they're in the body that they want to be in. So I can see if an insurance company is like, well, 3 out of 4 people are fine with just this stage, I don't want to pay for the rest of it, then they'd want to make you go through that. Which brings us to the next part, or as my understanding is the last step of the gender reassignment, which is surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I also read that after 12 months of hormone therapy, that's when you can start the surgeries, which is why I tagged that before. So you've been on it for a year and now you can start going undergoing the surgeries, right?
Correct. Yes. I don't know of any surgeon that will go, or rather even any insurance company that will cover it if you're under a year. I had to wait a year to even change the gender marker on my license. So
oh, wow.
The year is really like that mark where I don't know who made that time. The year is really that mark when they're like, okay, now you can – we're certain that you're sure enough and you can go through surgery or whatever course you want to take, and we can change your license for you and whatnot. Actually changing your license, the gender marker in your license now, at least in Florida, is relatively easy. Before, a few years back, you had to have had some kind of gender reassignment surgery and a letter from your surgeon. Now all you need is a letter from your physician stating that you are on hormone therapy and it's been a year, and you take that over to DMV and they change it for you. Where before you've had to have surgery, that would have been the only way.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So as far as the surgeries go, it's basically, and by basically I mean a lot more, but they recreate the sex organs of the desired gender. They might give breast implants or breast reductions. Is there any other caveats to those?
yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. For a female to male, what they do is they go ahead and there's 3 different ways to do this. The most common is a double incision, and it's right under the breast, and what they do is they remove the mammary gland, and in some cases if you need it, they do lipo the chest, and then when everything's removed, they cut out the excess skin and they go ahead and sew you back up together, so you have a very flat, tight chest, and it resembles that of a naturally born cis male's chest. And For male to female, it's breast implants as you know, a cis woman would get if she wasn't happy with her breast. Mm-hmm. But and then a bottom surgery. A lot of people don't go on to do this. One, it's very, very expensive.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There's an insurance will find any way to get out of that. I mean, a phalloplasty. Yeah, phalloplasty, which would be for male to female alone, I think the starting price is like $25,000, and it goes up from there.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And then with that surgery, there's a lot of complications. The main complications they come up with is stretching of the urethra, and they have a lot of issues with that, and infection afterwards because of that. So that's a really complicated surgery. And then, oddly enough, male to female, the bottom surgery is a lot easier. I mean, I've seen some. I don't know how much I can say on here, but
say whatever go for you it. Want. Yeah,
that's why we gave that disclaimer up top.
Some male to female, you know, down under surgeries, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's the prettiest thing you've ever seen. So, and there's a lot less complications and stuff like that, and they, you know, they have complete full feeling and everything works exactly how it's supposed to work. Yeah. And then with female to male, they do as much as they can. They connect all the nerves and whatnot. And like I said, the main problem is still lengthening, is making the urethra the right length. Mm-hmm. But there's two different types of surgery. You can either just like we talked about earlier, the clitoris does grow. You could extend that, mm-hmm. Maybe only by an inch more or two. So it's like it would be like a very, very small penis. You couldn't really, you know, have sex naturally with it or anything like that.
Yeah.
And there's the phalloplasty, and that's where they take a skin graft from your forearm or your thigh, and they create a, you know, phallic, they create a penis for you, and then they go ahead and they take the clit, and you can either choose to leave it at the head of the penis they create for you, or you can leave the clit right where it is. So you still have a lot of feeling there, and with phalloplasty, you could have natural sex. What they do, since you cannot get an erection as a cis man would, they put a pump in what they – when they recreate the scrotum, they put a pump in the scrotum. And then you just – you know, you do your thing. You grab your scrotum. you pump it a few times, and that gives you the erection. But basically, it would just be like any – sex, just you just got it inflate and deflate. I know this sounds terrible.
So no, but if you think of it, like, okay, let's talk about this like completely abstract, just from like an engineering standpoint.
Yeah,
how amazing is that?
That's very impressive.
it's crazy that, you know, medical science has come that far.
Yeah,
that, you know, they can do that.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And you know, I only know one guy who's actually had it done, and he had a lot of complications in the beginning for the first year, but he's really happy with it now. And I don't know if this is a thing of price or because complication, but I really most trans men do not go through with bottom surgery. It's really like a thing that's I guess I want to say almost rare. There's more men that don't go for it at all than men that do, you know. Yeah. I guess it really depends how important it is to the person.
Yeah. I think that's probably a big misconception for people too.
Yeah.
Because when they think you know, when you're just walking off the street and you know anything about any LGBT community, you think that that's the first thing that people would jump to, which is kind of why we wanted to do this.
Well, yeah, and the main message that I'm getting from this whole episode is that it really comes down to the individual from the very beginning to the very end. It's all about an individual experience. So you can't, I mean, we can go over the basics of it, but when you dive much deeper, There's no checklisted way to do it. It's all very personal. So,
yeah, you got it. Yeah, when you scratch the surface, it's absolutely different experience for everyone. You know, it's something that I may feel I need, the next trans guy next to me might not need it at all. You know, so it really is a person to person kind of thing. It's just, there's no like one way, you know.
Right. Yeah. So I know your surgery hasn't happened yet, so maybe this answer will change. But what has been the? We'll do a follow up. What's been the hardest part of this entire process for you individually?
Actually, you know, the beginning was the toughest part for me. I'm scared as all hell to finally go through with, like, just finally doing it. But what scared me most was coming out to my coworkers and peers and how they were going to react to it. My family has always known, so I've been blessed in that kind of situation. My family is very accepting, very open family. But I actually had my first shot a week before I started a brand new job. So it was really nerve-wracking, like telling my bosses, like just getting on a meeting with my bosses and telling them this is what's going on, and then coming out to my coworkers. And I mean, luckily enough, I work for an extremely progressive company, so everybody was very cool, and they were very...
That's really good.
Yeah, I mean, they're very accommodating. They use my correct pronouns and names, and they change everything around so that it fits that. So I was very lucky in that aspect as well.
I love that.
Cool. Yeah, I have a friend that... I'm from New York originally, Roman, and I moved to Iowa for Desiree, who's my girlfriend and your buddy. That's how I know you. But when I was in New York, I had a friend who his little sister was his little sister, and now it's his little brother.
Yeah.
And that happened after I moved. And now, like, seeing all of his updates on there, one of the things he posted was that, like, people at his work don't get his pronoun correct.
Oh.
And I could only imagine how that feels that when you're spending all of this, like,
Dude,
personal it's growth. Terrible yeah. feeling. It's, you know, even still now, I don't know if you guys have seen a picture of what I look like, but I have a full beard. I even
beautiful
still now
tattoos.
My office manager here where I live, she'll still refer to me as a she, and I'm thinking to myself, like, when was the last time you saw a woman like this? You know, like, I mean, so there's still people that even though they've seen these changes and they know what's going on, they just don't connect the dots or what it is. But in the beginning, at first, before I was passable, it was just it's this feeling that makes you kind of cringe, like when you go out to dinner with with your girlfriend or your sister, and the waiter or waitress comes up, "What can I get you, ladies?" And it's just like ugh, cringe kind of feeling. And
yeah,
I mean, you can't blame the person; they don't know. You don't got a stamp on your forehead, but.
Sure.
But you know, before I was passable, it was just like really just awkward, and just every time like the wrong pronoun came into play, it just made me feel terrible. And it's crazy. I mean, all it took was growing a beard for everything to change. And I mean, besides my office manager, who I think she's crazy. I still
yeah. So say they're probably conservative. Not making any judgments. I'm just saying.
I don't get misgendered anymore since the beard came into play. So I guess that did a lot for that. Yeah.
It shows how like fragile our views of male and female are.
I know.
It's you have a beard now. You're a boy.
Exactly. Right. That's exactly what it was like for me. For the beard, it was just misgendered all the time. As soon as the beard came in, I mean, it's crazy. We're just that conditioned, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just going to speak for myself. I'm glad that you're as chill about it as you are, because I feel very bad if I were to ever get that wrong. And I try very hard not to ever get that wrong. But you're very, it sounds like you're very understanding, which.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm super laid back about it. I mean, I don't, it actually, before I was, passable, like I am now, it would piss my girlfriend off a lot. And she would always want to say something about it. But I would, for me, it was just like, just let it go. Just let it go. It, yeah. You know, it's what it is. And one day it's not going to be like this anymore. And this is just all part of it. So yeah. I'm pretty laid back and chill about all that stuff. You know what I mean? And especially when I know someone is not doing it in a disrespectful manner, mm-hmm. They really don't know. So, I mean, they don't know you. You're a stranger. So, and they're conditioned to refer to you as to what they see, you know? So,
yeah.
It'd be a different story if someone was trying to be malicious or, you know, I don't, luckily I haven't dealt with a lot of that. Just a couple of like internet trolls on Instagram. There's nothing better to do, but.
Right. I hate that. Yeah. Social media is.
There's always some of those, nothing better time, you know, so.
That's but, too bad. So.
Yeah.
How. I mean, in our last episode, we talked to Maddie, and he said that he knew he was gay when he was 5 years old, which to me seems like really early. But how early did you know that undergoing the reassignment surgery would be something you'd want to do?
I always knew I always knew something was not right since I was a child. And you know, I was assigned, you know, female at birth, and. My mom would always put me in these dresses and girls' clothes, but I always wanted to, I always wanted the boys' clothes and the boys' toys, and I'd watch TV and movies and, you know, the hero and the story. I always wanted to be him, and that's what felt natural to me. It always felt unnatural to be, for lack of better words, a little girl and be treated as that and show, you know, it's really strange. It's something that, I mean, that's why I argue that it really is a way you were born, whether it's gay or trans or whatever you identify as. It really is just something that it's just how you were born. Yeah. It's not something you don't wake up, you know, one morning and decide, hey, I want to make my life harder, you know?
But, yeah.
Who would choose
I've
that?
Had a pretty good life as a girl. Let me try it as a boy now and make my life difficult.
Yeah.
You know, some conservatives saying, well, this is a choice you're making.
Exactly.
Well, nobody makes these kind of choices. You know, it's not any more choice than being straight, you know, or whatever. It's just I've known since I was a child. And funny enough, I was born in 83, so they didn't have the kind of technology they have now.
Right.
But they told they were all doctors were sure that I was going to be a boy. They were buying boys' clothes for me. My mom was under the impression that I was going to be born male until I think like 8 months into her pregnancy. They were like, oh no, we made a mistake.
Oh no.
So it's kind of funny that they all thought that. And then I was born. And since I can think back as whatever age you start to really develop a sense of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I was a boy. I never identified with being female or anything having to do with being female at all.
And yeah, and really the 80s were a good time to really find yourself. Nick can't really relate because we're both born in the 80s and he's not. but I was born in 1989 in April, so I had a good months in there to learn like that I had hands.
Yeah.
things like that. But no, I think that's, yeah, it's really like all we're explaining here is you're born a certain way.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Yes.
I was going to say before, I hate that idea that it's a choice. That's such a misinformed ideology to have.
It really is. And every time I hear people like, well, this is your choice. No. It's not anyone's choice. You know, this is just the way you were born.
The only choice that you make is to be miserable to appease other people or to be yourself.
Or to be the way you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's the choice you do have. You know, you either want to live, you know, hiding your true identity, whether it be whatever you identify as, to make other people happy, or, you know, you go ahead and make yourself happy, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I always say you have the right to be happy yourself, so do whatever it takes to make you happy, unless it's being mean to other people.
Yeah. I don't know why the crazy conservatives even care. Like, who cares?
Exactly. That bothers me so much.
I'm not worried what they're doing with their lives. I mean, that's their lives. Why they're so worried about mine, you know?
Yeah, unless they're, you know, voting.
Unless they're voting, then I'm very worried.
Yes,
I'm 100% with you there.
We always end up really political no matter what we're talking about.
I try to say
it's just the world we live in. But
it's hard not. These times, it's very hard not to get political. It really is.
But speaking of society, I think I just got like one last question for you here. What kind of reactions have you seen from society during your transition?
You know, this is going to sound really weird because I know most people have probably an opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. But ever since I came out and decided to transition, I've had this reaction of almost popularity. It's really, really damn strange.
That's like good.
It's been pretty positive, but it's caused a lot of people from all over to flock to me and
want
to reach out to me. hit on me even. It's been kind of strange. I don't know. Just some people have, you know, really bad experiences with it.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that mine is good, as much as I just think it's kind of strange that just transitioning would make people more interested in me and in my life, you know.
Do you think that that might stem from that there are people that we live in a heterosexual world, unfortunately. That's like everything is based on that. And that it's cool to know a trans person for them, or like it's something. Do you think it stems from
like a novelty aspect?
I would be lying if I said no. I hate to say this. I know I'm gonna get so much hate.
you don't have to say it if you want to.
We can edit it out for real.
I feel like some of it has become a trend. I really do, and I think some people they want that novelty of saying like I have a trans friend, or I have a trans, you know, my boyfriend is trans, my girlfriend is trans, and it's really just
it makes them seem like they're more progressive and open to
yes that's what, at least that's what I've noticed in the past few years. It's I don't know, it's like brownie points or something strange. Around that too much yet, but it's just like, I don't know, it's almost, I guess I hate to use the word trend, but I feel that it's kind of become that in the last few years.
I hate to use this kind of comparison, but I kind of feel like it's that kid on the playground who always said his uncle worked for Nintendo. It's like, what is that lie doing for you? Or like, what are you benefiting from? That's an unfortunate reality. I think that's pretty much all I have, all the questions that I have. Do you have anything else, John?
No. This is pretty awesome.
I know. Do you want to take a quick break and then we'll plug our dumb stuff again?
Yep.
Cool. We got one more review, John. Are you super excited?
Yep.
Guess what? It's 34 out of 2,000 that we want. It's 5 stars. It's from Good Robot Mouse.
Just as a reminder, we're trying to get 2,000 reviews on iTunes.
And we're at 34.
We're at 34. We're on our way.
So Good Robot Mouse said, my new favorite podcast. That was the title. And then they said, great topics, funny and informative. Keep up the great work. So thank you so much, Good Robot Mouse.
Who?
That's awesome.
Thank you. Wrote it myself. No, I didn't. But that actually, I think that's... sounds like Michael from This Good Robot, and I know he's got a little sweet on him in there, so it might not be, but you should listen to This Good Robot, and there's a plug for a person who I might think that is.
Yeah, well, go listen to that anyway. Other thing, I think we should give a quick shout-out to Barry Ritholt. oh my gosh, Barry Ritholtz.
Yes.
Who I believe is a writer for Bloomberg and gave us a very nice shout out on his website. And we can't thank him enough for the publicity that he gained us.
Yeah.
And if you want to join our community of folks, you can find us on Facebook.
Which is facebook.com/groups/strangersdillshow.
I also want to say thank you to our Facebook folks. We had Matt on last week who talked about conversion therapy and that traumatic experience. And apparently a lot of our listeners have reached out to him with really positive messages and wanting to learn more about it. So
yeah,
thank you for being a positive community. I was actually very surprised that that happened.
That was amazing. Yeah, Matt on their own, like we went and looked in our own group and Maddie opened a discussion, like a forum about like if anyone had questions, which was really cool.
Yeah. And it's actually right now, John, I never get goosebumps. I have goosebumps right now. I'm not making that up because our fan base, or I don't want to call them fans, but our listeners are the coolest people ever.
Yeah.
Also on Twitter, @StrangerStill. Roman, do you have any things that you want to plug, like your Instagram or any support groups or anything?
My Instagram is awesome, and
it is.
I do. I get a lot of questions from a lot of younger trans guys on my Instagram. So if anyone that's listening does have any questions or just wants to talk about it, it's roman.fitzgerald, and that's my Instagram, and you can DM me there and we can talk about whatever. I don't really have anything I want to plug, but there's a pretty good resource site if you guys want to check it out. That's www.glad.org/transgender/resources, and that has a lot of different links, so it'll outsource you to a lot of really, really good info and even legal help and all that kind of stuff. So you guys should really check that out.
Sweet. Yeah, we'll post links to that.
Say we'll link both your Instagram and that glad.org on our Facebook page and Twitter. I don't think I have anything else. I think that kind of brings us to an end. I will say that I feel like this has been very awesome. This has been a beautiful experience just learning about all this, because I did research and not even that covered a lot of the things that I learned from you, Roman. So thank you for
joining us
in your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
Say I'm still Roman.
I'm still Roman.
And this is Stranger Still. Thanks.